Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning. Well, it sounded very FM there, or AM, I guess I should. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's
Ray Graff has always explained that's called puking on the radio.
Yeah, well, that is exactly what it is.
It's Joe and Alan in the morning.
Joe and Alan in the morning. Favorites of yesterday and today. Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel. I listened back to tapes when I first started, and that's how you sound. And,
yeah. And now you're the...
Thank you for hiring me and making me sound like a normal human being.
Now you're the king of the intellectuals.
Well, good morning. And it's the 26th of July. It is a Wednesday, 9:13 in the morning. We have a lot to discuss. A very busy day in Washington and throughout the country. And we will talk about those issues. A very busy day here at WAMC as well, as we celebrated the birthday of our leader, Alan Chartok, who had a what you would call a non, what do they call those? Like a non
celebratory.
Well, yeah, not celebratory, but
denominational.
Like 5-year
landmark or a benchmark birthday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 76.
So, okay, in between. So, well, not in between.
No, yeah, yeah. So I have to wait.
It was
to
a midterm 80. Election.
Time. Yeah, that's right. It's a midterm. It's a midterm birthday. There you go, Rich.
I have to wait till I'm 80 before I get another party. That's
so,
the rule.
But you said you don't want cake, so you know what's the point?
No, but last night we had a wonderful thing. I got home and we decided, as exhausted as I was and Roselle was, we better do something celebratory. So we went to the restaurant most people think is the best restaurant in Great Barrington, Cafe Adam, with Chef Adam. And he's been on our Food Friday show.
That's right.
And he's a wonderful man, wonderful young man. And we ate. We had a great time and he sent out some, dare I say it, ice cream with a candle in it.
There you go.
You just live on the wild side, don't you?
And I ate it.
Well, that's the big question I was going to ask you.
Yeah,
you ate it. That's great.
I ate it. Well, Ray Graff said the most amazing thing yesterday on my way out. And he said, eat a piece of cake. I said, I'm not eating any cake. He said, look, you're 76. Who knows if you're going to make it to 77? Eat a piece of cake.
Exactly right. So what kind of food do they have there?
What'd you say?
What is it?
Oh, everything. I mean, this guy is so creative. He's awesome. So good. Oh, boy, anything. Tuna tartare was wonderful.
Ooh, oh, wow.
It was all great.
Good stuff. Well,
happy day after your birthday.
That's right. Okay. As you work into your 76th year.
Eat cake.
Be well. All right. Let me introduce Rich Honan to our program.
He happy
is
birthday, Rich.
a corporate attorney, and we're thrilled to have him with us. He joins us every once in a while. He joins us weekly or when he feels suited to. Good morning. How
good
are
morning.
You?
Good
morning.
Very
nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Teresa Bourgeois, of course, a regular on our panel, a communications consultant, and always very affirming what's reassuring when you're here.
And we get tremendous numbers of comments about you, Teresa.
Yes. People love you.
Well, thank you very much.
As they,
delighted to
as
be here.
As they should. Good morning.
I don't know how reaffirming it will be today. But we'll,
all right. Well,
see.
That's Rich's job. He's going to make us feel better about everything. Okay.
Because his team's in charge.
You didn't agree that you were going to do that.
His team's in charge.
I thought you were going to say, I will help you make you feel better about this.
I don't. It's funny. We were talking off air. I don't think the Republicans are in charge. I don't think they're going to get health care reform.
Okay, so that was the big question yesterday. Will it clear the hurdle? And it cleared the hurdle. The Senate votes to down broad Obamacare repeal, which was the bill that came immediately following the decision to move ahead, which was a tiebreaker with Mike Pence coming in to break the vote and making it 51-50 to start the debate, came only a week after the Republican effort to dismantle a pillar of Mr. Obama's legacy appeared all but doomed. It provided an initial win for President Trump, who pushed, cajoled, and threatened senators in recent days and weeks to at least begin debating the repeal of the health care law. The victory could be fleeting. Senate Republicans still have no agreement on a repeal bill they can ultimately pass to uproot the law that has provided health insurance to millions of Americans. So we seem to have some dissent in the panel. Teresa was saying that she believes that it is all but a
accomplished.
A vote away, and we're could be accomplished.
Well, I think that either way, they win now, because they being the conservative Republicans or those who want to dismiss. I hope I'm wrong about this, but I'm wearing black today. I'm very gloomy. I think the problem now is because they didn't stop the process and signal that they wanted to go back to regular order and use the ACA. You know, if they had done that, then the ACA, the Obamacare, would be the base in which they then work to improve it. But now they're going to do one of two things. Either they're going to pass a bill in the next 20 hours of legislating, which is all they have to vote on this, and then they're going to move it to a House-Senate reconciliation.
Yeah, that's where the danger
they
comes
may
in.
Or may not reconcile, but they're going to draw out the process now. The process will go on for a while.
So let me, I'm sorry for interrupting, but let me add something to this very good analysis, and that is the danger here is the so-called skinny bill. The skinny bill means they pass a nothing bill,
right.
But that puts them into conference.
That's the problem.
As you just suggest. And then they come out with, you know, something not as draconian as in the House, not the, quote, mean bill that, you know, that that was derided by Trump after he pushed it in the beginning. And that's where you have to watch out for the so-called skinny bill.
And if they go to conference, you know, maybe they come up with a resolution quickly, and that's not good for those who have pre-existing conditions or schools that rely on Medicaid or any of the other people who care about health, having health insurance, not access, but actually having health insurance. Or the other thing, you know, so they move something quickly, they resolve something quickly. Well, the other thing is they just stay in this limbo where they can't resolve something and it's in conference for a long period of time. And either way, they've succeeded in destabilizing the markets, because now the real problem now is uncertainty if they do nothing, because the markets can't handle uncertainty. And so I think that the damage, you know, if they had stopped this yesterday, then that would have signaled some certainty in the insurance markets.
But Teresa, aren't you interested in the fact that the vote on this replacement bill yesterday, which McCain, by the way, voted for after this incredibly gracious speech, but the bill yesterday that they tried to pass failed miserably. I mean, really out of whack. So that's got to mean something, doesn't it?
Right. It does mean something, but the fact that the easiest vote for them was to stop the vote to proceed. Because that could have stopped, that could have forced, you know, Senator McCain talked about wanting to go back to quote unquote regular order in a process where you have a bill, you have right. hearings, you have discussion, you air it out, and you end up with something bipartisan. If they went back to regular order, it's most likely that what they would be doing is what the Democrats have asked them to do for 7 years, which is work on improving the infrastructure they put in place, which, let's remind ourselves, it was a Republican infrastructure. Obamacare is basically a Republican-proposed infrastructure.
Romney Care
was developed initially in the Heritage Foundation. It's not something the Democrats loved. It's something that they tolerated. And it's something that over time has begun to work. It was so discouraging yesterday to see Senator McCain do what he did, because he had a moment, you know, it was a legacy moment, and he missed that moment. He didn't take that moment to vote now.
Yeah, but one last thing here. Isn't it interesting, and I'd love to hear what Rich has to say about all this, but isn't it interesting that the way that this worked out that this group of Republicans decided that what they needed to do was to get on the record somehow to prevent a primary, and they did that by voting for the you know, the permission to proceed. But then a lot of them are voting no on the substantive issue.
On the substance, yeah, they're voting no on the substance. So over the next 20 hours, I'm sorry, Rich, I'm not giving
I'm
room
listening.
For you to
no,
talk. I apologize. Over the next, they have to, because they're doing this through reconciliation, this is very arcane, but they have a very defined amount of time now that they can consider this bill. They have 20 hours. And there's a very restrictive process in which they can consider the bill. But what's the bill? They don't know what the bill is that they're considering. I mean, it's they voted on a motion to proceed to a bill that they didn't even know what it is. And so, you know, it's not clear now that first, you know, what they voted no on, after they voted on the motion to proceed, which said we're going to go and we're going to consider and we're going to debate a bill, the first bill that came up that you were talking about is the last bill that was scored by CBO that said what? I'm lost on my numbers. 22 million people, 23 million people will lose their health care coverage. So they did resoundingly vote that down. So now what's going to come up today? You know, it's not even clear.
Rich Honan.
Yeah, it's funny. I look at it really the other way. I thought that I was obviously dismayed that that as Alan points out, that the repeal, the flat repeal, you know, was so roundly defeated.
43-57.
Yeah, and not necessarily because I'm in favor of that, but you know, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it, and you know, I can do nothing but agree and amplify your comments that you just can't the amount of hypocrisy from the establishment Republicans that they're willing to, you know, vote for a repeal when they know it's not going to work, and then when the rubber hits the road, you know, they pull back. I thought that was pretty disappointing. I think that is something that actually probably surprised Trump personally.
The fact that I
think he always felt, and I think he could be forgiven for thinking this, that the Republicans having voted over however many times over 7 years for a flat repeal, I think he always felt like, well, we could always get a flat repeal. I think he didn't want that. I think he wanted a repeal and some level of replace. And I think I was certainly shocked that, you know, somebody like Murkowski, who, you know, 2 years ago, you know, votes for repeal, and now that she can get it, doesn't vote for it.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. How is it that this guy, Trump, has the nerve to go before the American people and say it's going to be a better bill, it's going to be better for all of you,
now
when as Teresa has just pointed out, you know, the CBO scores all these people, including up to 32 million people will lose their health care
under one of their presidents.
This was a big step. Now we move forward towards truly great health care for the American people.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all, with what Trump said. I certainly have to point out some of the factual inaccuracies. I agree with much of what Teresa says.
But if we don't know what the bill is, how do we know that it's truly great health care for the American people?
That is why we debating it. I mean, it's just the essence of
it. But debating what?
But yeah, in the White House.
We're debating what the health care bill is going to be. I mean, I got to tell you, this is the essence of American liberalism.
You and the Republicans have been on this now for 7 years.
I'm not a Republican.
You and the Republicans, I said. Okay. For 7 years, we have a bill to replace, we have a bill to replace, we have a bill to replace.
I'm shocked that they don't have
20 hours
one.
Of votes beginning this morning, and what did the President of the United States, who was a Republican, say in the White House garden yesterday? He said, we are going to come up with a great health care that satisfies all the needs of the people. We're going to come up with it. The bill is on the Senate floor, and they don't have a plan yet.
And what about hearing?
Plan.
And what about hearings?
Yeah.
And what about testimony? Well, and what about letting the doctors have their say and everybody else? This is just outrageous.
So far, everything that they've come up with, the nurses oppose, the doctors oppose, the hospitals oppose, the governors oppose.
Let Rich speak here.
Well, look, first, I mean, again, what I wanted to say was it's the essence of American liberalism that you guys are outraged that we would actually vote to debate on a bill. I mean, I can't imagine that they didn't get 90 votes to at least debate something, whether there was a bill or not. But, you know, I'll put that aside. The fact that you have to have the vice president break a vote just to have the Congress discuss a bill that everybody's been arguing about for 7 years, to me, is ridiculous.
But your own John McCain said, let's return to regular order.
John McCain is, I think he's an authentic American hero, in every way, but he is out of step with the way American politics now works, and the whole reason
pre-fascism.
Is regular order does not exist anymore. Obamacare was not passed by regular order. You have to keep going back to that. And Teresa, when you say this was a Republican bill, I just
No, Romney invented it in my state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, right. Well, right. It came out, the idea, the structure, infrastructure came out of the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, talk to Jonathan.
Out of the Center for American Progress. It didn't come out of the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. It didn't come out of Brookings. It came out of the Heritage Foundation, and it was tested as Romney Care in Massachusetts.
And it didn't work, and what Gruber did with that bill took it way out of anything the Heritage Foundation came up with. But the point was,
for example, the
fraud with which the bill, the admitted fraud, the bragged about fraud with which the American people were, what
did they change from the Heritage Foundation infrastructure?
If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. The original Heritage Foundation bill was supposed to actually have that. The original Heritage and the original Heritage Foundation bill, by the way, goes back years before Romney Care. Okay, and there was about 16 different iterations. But my point is, we're talking about John McCain. I agree with John McCain. It would be great if we can go back to regular order. But Obamacare was not passed through regular order. Obamacare was passed in the way which it was. It was not designed to work. It was designed to be impossible to unwind, and it is proven to work.
I mean, there was reports out again in the last few days saying that, you know, when you look back over the last few years, it's slowing the rate of growth.
Well,
more people are insured.
But just to clarify Rich's point, not that he needs my help, but that the two things. First of all, McCain said that yesterday, that this was, you know, it would be nice to see if there was working together, unlike when Obamacare. He made that point on the floor yesterday. But also he was, don't you think, not just talking about healthcare, but talking about the political climate as a whole.
Oh, absolutely. And McCain, you know, he's true to his word. McCain was always, you know, back in the days when it was McCain and Kennedy and kind of the where folks could actually, it's a cliche, could reach across the aisle, and that's great. I'm here to tell you those days have gone. And what I think the larger picture that they're all missing, I think, in the Senate is the legislative process has become the least important part of American governance now. It's almost all at the executive level, and it's all at the regulatory level. And it does the amount of actual legislation that comes out is very low and doesn't really affect American life the way executive orders and executive fiat and regulation and litigation have taken over. I just think they're out of step,
but Rich,
if that's what they're looking
the
at.
The other big thing that happened yesterday, and I know we'll get to it later, but just as a process point, is the sanctions bill. And that was dealt with on regular order, what anyone would consider regular order. There was a bill, there were hearings, there was discussion, there was bipartisan input, there was external input. And they, you know, they passed a bill that, you know, not everybody loved all of it, but enough people loved enough of it to pass it.
Right.
That was regular order. I know we'll get to the substance of that later, but, you know, regular order hasn't disappeared. It's just disappeared on some things.
We're going to pause there, and we will take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, and Teresa Bourgeois join us. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. I'm assuming we're going to get a lot of them this morning. So keep them short, keep them brief, and we'll move through them quickly. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this news break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a lot of letters this morning. Of course, we just heard from the BBC in the news that broke that the President of the United States tweeted this morning to not allow transgender into the U.S. military.
Three tweets.
A series of tweets. So we have some letters regarding that as well as the other issues that we've been discussing, which of course include health care. And we'll get to those letters right now.
Okay. Well, all right. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
This is my friend Robert.
Yes.
Very disappointed with McCain's hypocrisy. He rushes to D.C. To cast a partisan vote and then proceeds to excoriate the chamber as being partisan. I wish him well, but I thought he might have wanted to be remembered for his compassion and empathy, not as a partisan party loyalist. And that's from Bob in Milford. Okay. Good morning, panel, says Paul. A Trump distraction? Good discussion, as always. Have you seen this morning's news alert? Trump says that transgender people will not serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Just a distraction from the rest of his show? Thanks. And that's from Paul.
I fear that might be true.
What'd you say?
I fear that might be true, a distraction.
Yeah, he may have thrown that out, a little red meat. And David says, good morning, panel. And good it's morning. Working. And by the way, it's working. Transgender soldiers is a topic. On top of everything else going on, what are your thoughts on the story that the Washington Post just broke saying Trump is no longer going to accept transgender soldiers? ? Talk about nauseating. Thanks. And that one is from David.
I think it's interesting when they say the Washington Post broke. He tweeted it. The president tweeted it.
He tweeted
it,
so. Three tweets.
So I don't know. That wasn't exactly a breaking story. But President Trump said that he will not allow or accept any transgender person to serve in the military, consulted with generals and military experts on the policy. He said, our military must focus on the decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical cost and disruption that transgender in the military would entail.
Now, he has not said no gay people in the military, right? What he said is no transgender people in the military. And I suppose
very, very different.
They might be thinking about where the greater harm politically could be done to them, because there's a lot of people who will estimate that gay people in the United States constitute 10% of the voting public. 10%, that's a lot of people. You win or lose an election by 5%. It's generally seen as a landslide one way or the other. So so maybe they're thinking about that. Who can they objectify, the right is the word, or bully?
Bully.
Yeah.
That's the word that came to mind when I read his tweets.
Yeah.
It's just bullying.
Yeah. Panel, what killed regular order in the Senate and Congress? And that's from Anthony.
Harry Reid. And whether love him or hate him, I mean, I don't like him. You guys, maybe you guys
him,
do.
Yeah.
But Harry Reid, years from now, they'll be talking about how Harry Reid changed the entire dynamic of the way the Senate works. Holding up bills, allowing his president to act by, you know, he was very strong on executive orders, very allowing the regulatory change. And I'm not saying yay or nay on it. I'm just saying.
Sounds like
that,
you're saying nay.
Well,
it's
but,
a bit fact but
well, listen, now when somebody on my side is in charge, I'm like, great, the president could do almost, you know, whatever they want. And Congress is walking around, you know, in paralysis. I'm just saying years from now, people will talk about how that was a sea change. I really think that Congress is, unless it changes, is no longer going to be a co-equal branch of government.
I agree. I mean, I certainly understand what you're saying, but Mitch McConnell has a large role in that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Let's be clear. I understand.
Reid started it,
and McConnell jumped in with both hands.
I wouldn't say he started it.
One at a time, guys, because we'll get a letter.
No, but I agree. I absolutely agree. I think the innovation was Reid's, and I think McConnell jumped in. I think not even as competently at it.
It was pretty competent
on the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court nomination.
If perfection is
this is word. Known as the Rich Honan line of argumentation, two wrongs make a right.
No, I'm not saying it's right. The question was what ended regular order?
Okay.
And I'm saying regular order has ended over the last couple of administrations, and I don't know if anybody is going to want to go back to it.
Okay, Ann says, good morning. When Rich says them should welcome debate, he is ignoring the fact that this isn't the new bill. It's reconciliation, which has limitations on changes that can be made, and there's nothing available to all senators to know what they're debating on. This is no way regular order. And one thing before we dart into this, there still is the matter of the parliamentarian who is saying that there are elements of these bills that do not fit into reconciliation as opposed to regular order or debate.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And the whole thing here is when a bill is passed by reconciliation, basically basically every section of the bill has to have a budgetary effect.
And how can you have that when you don't know what it is?
That's the first thing. But the other thing is you could almost say almost anything has a budgetary effect if you attenuate it long enough.
All right.
So I agree. I think that the parliament, I don't think it was ever meant for the Senate parliamentarian to be deciding what the Senate should be talking about.
So President Barack Obama, just Rich, a little fact check here, 277 executive orders over his 8 years, total number on par with modern predecessors, the lowest per year average in 120 years.
Yes.
Trump, just the opposite of
and,
that,
and,
by the
and
way.
You've made that point before, and I've made the point before that...
You had said that...
I've made the
Obama.
Point before that the scope of the Obama executive orders, the areas in which he decided to use executive power as opposed to legislative or regulatory power, far exceeded that.
Like ending the mandate for the health care bill that Donald Trump did?
Oh, I would see the example I would have used is saying 25 times in a row, I do not have the power to change the immigration laws, and then changing the immigration laws by executive fiat. The amount of executive orders, I grant you, there's other people who might have used them more over 8 years, but the scope, and it goes back to the regular order idea. And I'm not saying this is good. Look, it's good when your guy's in charge, and it's bad when the other guy's in charge or the other woman's
in charge.
Well,
now they've all been reversed.
Yeah,
right.
So, and what's going to happen? And what's going to happen again? Then the next person comes in, they're going to reverse them again. This is not how it was meant to be, but that's why regular order is.
Trump has signed 90 in the first 100 days.
Yeah, and
average per year for other presidents, 35.
Yeah, and if he was here, he would say, I had to because I had to undo all the ones that Obama did in the first place, of course.
Okay,
I think you're going to see those numbers increase exponentially in future administrations unless the Congress gets its act together.
Well, they will, because every action gets a reaction. I mean, I think that that's exactly what's happening right now. For example, you see the effort by Trump to get rid of Sessions. Now, you see...
You think so? You think that's what he's trying to do?
To get rid of Sessions?
Yeah, I'm asking.
Do I ever?
You think?
Yeah. Why? I think the whole idea is get rid of Sessions. I've said it again and again.
No, I think it sure looks like he's trying to get rid of him. I think that he might have been doing this to accomplish exactly what got accomplished, I guess, late last night. The interesting thing is now apparently the Attorney General is going to start investigating the leaks that are coming out of both the White House and the intelligence community. And the interesting thing about that was that story itself was leaked. It was reported by by Fox News before.
So
come on.
I think
the way he motivates the Attorney General is by publicly humiliating him to get him to proceed on the leaks?
No, come on. It's outrageous.
Absolutely.
It's outrageous. He's trying to get rid of Sessions because he's caught. He's trying to get rid of Sessions because he's caught. And when he gets rid of Sessions, then he gets rid of Rosenstein. And when he gets rid of Rosenstein, he fires Mueller. We all know it. And you know what? He's made it quite plain by his own utterances, and that's a great word, utterances, that he's done that. And that's who he's after, in the same way he foolishly fired Comey. And made much of his own trouble. Anyway, I'm going back to the letters.
Yes,
is that all right with you?
Please do.
Okay. Hi, pal. I am so thankful I live in Massachusetts. Me too. Because we are going to be more protected than any other states if the ACA is repealed. Mass Health, RomneyCare, goes above and beyond the ACA and is a 27-year-old with a $1,500 a month medication that the state pays for out of my private insurance. Insurance denies it. I'm proud to have the actual RomneyCare, not the ACA version, which was made to appease politicians, and that's from Megan.
And I agree. I absolutely agree.
James says, Obamacare was always a ruse to get single-payer Trump care is in the... Okay, let me start again. James says...
Single-payer, period.
Obamacare was always a ruse to get single-payer Trump care as in the way of that... I'm just reading what it says, and requires correctly the free market to reduce cost over time. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe has laid it out again and again and again. Read your emails before you send. All
yes.
Right.
Maybe that was E.E. Cummings who sent it.
You're right.
I think you're right.
Catherine says, wondering why Rich is saying a return to regular order is no longer possible and that executive order is the new normal, what about the context of how abnormal this political climate has become and the need to revive norms that have worked in the past? It is concerning that what is happening now is considered to be a new normal. I couldn't agree with Catherine more. That is exactly the way that it works. When things get out of hand, people start to flex their muscles and get back to work. And I think you see it in the Sessions case, and I think you're going to see it much more now. I think that Trump is going down. And when he does, when it's done, there's going to be a resurgence of normal order.
I will say I hope there is a resurgence of normal order. I wasn't advocating. I was just pointing out what the fact is. It has been the fact over the last administration. It's certainly been the fact over this administration. I'm not, and somebody needs to tell me what's going to change that paradigm.
There is certainly a real strain on the fundamentals of our democracy right now. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Julia says, Rich, take off your rose-colored glasses for a moment. Which party made it their sole?
They clash with your suit.
Which party made it their sole objective to make Obama a one-term president? So you think that that's an atmosphere in which the executive can work with Congress? If the last 8 years marked a shift to executive power, you can lay that right at the feet of the recalcitrant Republican Party. Yeah, and 7 years with no real plan for health care replacement, and that's from Jules.
Okay. My point was regular order. I'm going to keep saying this. Regular order is not the way things are done anymore. And she needs to explain to me how that's going to change.
Rich,
I don't care at whose feet you lay the blame.
Should we explain to the listeners what regular order is?
Regular order means that that when you have, at least my understanding is, a bill, if a bill starts, if it's a budget bill, it starts in the House. Mm-hmm. The House votes on it. There's amendments. There's some give and take.
Hearings.
I'm sorry.
Hearings.
People testify as experts. And then it moves up. It gets passed. It moves up to the Senate. Senate makes its own changes. More testimony. More hearings. Then there's usually a conference or a committee that will get together and reconcile the changes in the bill if they're not terribly substantive, and then it gets sent up to the president, either passed or not.
It has to go back to both houses.
Yeah, right. Depending on the changes,
bill. Identical bill has to be approved.
Unless they do it through reconciliation, which is outside of regular order.
All right. We're very late for a break, so let's go to a break. We'll come back. We'll have more letters. We'll have more conversation. We welcome your notes. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning, we have a news break at the top of the hour, so I just want to give us a couple minutes to talk about John McCain, who returned to Capitol Hill yesterday, battling an aggressive form of brain cancer, used his moment in the spotlight to deliver a sobering message to his colleagues, saying senators' work is, quote, more partisan, more tribal, more of the time than any other time I remember. He told his audience in the Senate floor, deliberations can still be important and useful, but I think we'd all agree that they've been overburdened by greatness lately, and now they aren't producing much for the American people. McCain delivered his speech after casting a vote in favor of beginning debate on the Republican health care bill, but while his vote was critical to the success of that notion, he criticized Republican leaders for their lack of transparency and suggested the healthcare effort might not ultimately succeed. We tried to amend the Affordable Care Act by coming up with a proposal behind closed doors in consultation with the administration, then springing it on skeptical members, trying to convince them it's better than nothing, asking us to swallow our doubts and force it past a unified opposition. I don't think that's going to work in the end, and it probably shouldn't. What do we make of John McCain's remarks? Because I have seen commentary all over the board on them from all sides of the aisle.
It's a nice concept, but it's terribly naive, and it's not the way he's acted himself.
He admitted.
Yeah, but not even when he was doing good things. I mean, you can't get something done with 100 people in a room. That's just not how you do it. I think people talk about transparency, and obviously it needs to be there, but there's times when, yes, you have to have a smaller group of people in a room to at least come up with a template and then have people have at it. But you can't have 100 people do that. And by the way, there should be times when there's not transparency, because people should be able to get in a room and say things that are stupid or wrong or not fully thought out or perceived as inappropriate. People have to be able to have those conversations and be able to speak freely. I think there's a place for that, because you have to come up with something for people to at least talk about, and you don't do that with 100 people. I just don't think there's a way of doing that.
I want to reinforce what you said, Rich, and the other reason why that's important is because different members of the House and Senate become expert in different things, and that's why it's important that these bills go to committee and subcommittee. Because what happens is different members become expert in different, issue areas. And then other colleagues look to them. They might not be the expert on the issue, but they look to them for guidance on where to go on something. And so this process of introducing a bill, building a bipartisan consensus, going through hearings, and not just get the members of Congress, the House or Senate involved, but it also brings in the constituency groups. The hearing process helps build public support for an idea to move it along so that the country is along with them. I mean, remember on this health care bill, only, 17-18% of the country is on board with what the Republicans are trying to do in the Senate over the next 48 hours, so it's really unclear totally what they're trying to do. But quote-unquote regular order, the process that works, is done. And I don't think it's a naive notion. I think, again, I'm biased on this because I work for Senator Kennedy, but he showed over many, many years that this process can work, and he worked jointly with Senator McCain on some things and others. And I think that's why last night on Twitter and other social media, you saw his name coming up over and over again.
Kennedy's name.
Yeah. And certainly he was the liberal lion of the Senate, but he also was a workhorse in enacting legislation, because the thing that he did that people didn't talk about so much is that he built bipartisan support for legislation. He paired with different Republicans on different issues and built bipartisan support. That's why he was able to enact so much legislation.
And so that's what's been lacking. So you would have that process, and a lot of that process did take place in what we would call behind closed doors, but there were a lot more people who kind of maybe knew what was going on or who had some input, or at least were kind of in the loop. Now that process still takes place between closed doors, but then what comes out is presented as a fait accompli, and if you don't vote for it, you become outcast in your party. And I think that's where the disconnect has come.
And Lawrence writes a letter saying, "Dear panel, are we 100% convinced that John McCain is currently in his right mind?"
I haven't been for 10 years, so no.
You personally haven't been?
I have not been.
What, sure that he's in his right mind?
I have not
or
been
that
convinced
your...
that he's always in his right mind.
Oh, okay.
Correct.
Well, I think his speech was a moving speech, but it was totally inconsistent with his vote. He had a moment to leave a legacy. I mean, his legacy is already set, but to add to his legacy, and he missed that moment.
And then we heard from my neighbor, John.
Hi, John.
And his wife, Kathleen, who says, "Your neighbor John here, Kathleen, and I just wanted to say that you don't look a day over 76. But I want a shout out to Kathleen. I brought, he's an engineering guy. I brought over a thing. He was busy. And she proved once again how much better women are than men, because she fixed it immediately. It was a Framus for my pool. And I couldn't deal with it."
Well, thank you, Kathleen, for helping.
Yeah. Well, it proves once again, what our stereotypes can be.
Indeed.
Don't you see? Okay. Indeed. And hi, panel. This is possibly a hot take, but transgender issues have always been a distraction in American politics. It affects less than 1% of the population, but easily commands greater than 10% of the conversation. Don't we have bigger things to worry about? Not if you're transgender. It doesn't.
That's right.
Well, okay. If he's using this issue for purposes of distraction,
which
shame on him.
Yeah.
Well,
it's people's
lives.
for whatever reason, I would say.
Joanne says, hi, panel. Isn't Trump creating a hostile work environment, in quotes, with all of his intimidating statements and bullying of Jeff Sessions? I thought this was a violation of EEOC and considered harassment. And that's from Joanne.
Well, Newt Gingrich.
What protected class is Jeff Sessions in?
Newt Gingrich good point, told him to back down today. That was interesting. That's, you know, I think the far right is protecting their guy, and Sessions is their guy.
Holly says, I hate to say it, but Rich is right. The Democrats changed procedure to accomplish their ends during the Obama years, and the Republicans are simply using the opportunity to get their ways. People still need to stand for proper order, debate, factual evidence, and popular support for legislation. None of that is happening right now, and we need to reset our expectations about participation and accountability with our legislators. Good work today, panel. Thanks, from Holly. And Rich says, maybe follow up on why there is such polarity between the parties. A longer discussion is needed.
I think we need to decide if we want to sustain our democracy or not. That's what we need to decide. Well, what's our democracy going to be like? Do we want to sustain it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do. I think I will say, you know, we may be, I hate to say it, maybe being a little too hard on Congress, because something like healthcare in America, it's not like everybody wants to do this in the same way and we just can't figure out a way to do it. I mean, there's a huge diversity of opinions, from people who think we should be paying everything for everybody to people who think we shouldn't be paying anything for anybody. So this is an issue where people don't even agree on where they want to get to, let alone the very complex means of getting there.
Yeah, but Rich, it gets even worse than that, because the writer is right about the amount of anger and hostility that exists. And I think what happened was that when Trump, in this case, got elected by a very small minority, in other words, a couple of states in the Electoral College, and lost by 3 million votes, that was the green light to continue on that approach, which is, you know, a few people can get very angry and that's effective.
Well, I think there is a shift going on in the country that we don't yet understand fully. I think it has to do with the changing nature of work as things get more automated and less opportunities for people. And, you know, I think the economy, certainly there is a real issue, which I don't know, is it's intractable as the economic divide widens. That has implications for, you know, overall economy. But there was a fascinating on Charlie Rose. We were talking at the break about Charlie Rose. It was a fascinating conversation last night on Charlie Rose about the overall scope of the changes in health. And they were talking about what, you know, we talked about in the 90s with Senator Kennedy and around passing health care, is that you can only do big things about every 30 years in this country. And, you know, maybe you need to do this piecemeal, because it's very hard. I mean, you're really talking about restructuring. And this is, Rich, I think what you're saying. You're really talking about restructuring a large percentage of our economy if you're talking about changing the way healthcare works. And that's isn't nor should be an easy thing to do.
Nor is there any unanimity on whether we should be doing it in the first place and to what extent.
But
we're going to take a break. We have to take a break. Top of the hour, got to take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation right after this. Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. Let me introduce the panel just so you know who is on your radio. You have that right after all. Dr. Alan Chartok is here, and we'll get to the letters that he's going to read to us in just a moment. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Rich Honan is here. Rich is a corporate attorney, and by day and by early day, he is a panelist right on this program, and we're more than thrilled to have him here.
Good morning.
Teresa Bourgeois is a communications consultant, a very hardworking one, and is here with us, and we are thrilled. Thank you.
So glad to be here.
Thank you very much. You are the listener, and we welcome your letters, panel at wamc.org. We got a lot of letters on healthcare and McCain and everything else, so let's go into those, and then we'll move on to some other stuff, and we'll talk about Scaramucci, who did a three-rounder with Chris Cuomo this morning on CNN, which was quite something to listen to.
The mooch.
And
I did go to high school with him.
You did?
So he was 2 years behind me. So all of my siblings at Schreiber High School, everybody knows
mooch. And where is that Schreiber High School?
It's Port Washington.
Washington.
So North Shore of Long
Island. Is that
Long
Island? Yeah.
I knew either his older brother or cousin, but yeah.
Did you have an opinion on him prior to this?
I didn't know him. Now, well, what we liked about him was for a long time he was part of the group that was going to buy the Mets, and that was like the big deal that somebody from our high school was going to own the Mets.
There you go. Okay.
Anyway,
Alan, go ahead.
Okay, Lillian says it's so refreshing when you invite a conservative on your show to offset your extreme progressive opinions and balance the conversation so listeners can hear both sides and form their own opinions instead of being indoctrinated into your biased and often seriously distorted opinion. Thank you for that.
Thank you for your views.
Yeah. And George says, what have you concluded about whether Special Prosecutor Mueller can see Trump's tax returns? Did Rich ever express his opinion of this? I have, and I'm saying he can. And we know that because on a regular basis, people are prosecuted for falsifying their tax returns by the federal officials.
Yeah, because there's a good chance that somewhere in those buried returns is something that says $25 million bribe from Russian government, and that would be something relevant to
that. That would be relevant. John says, technically, the bill are,
line item.
The yeah. bill they are debating is the bill that passed the House. Of course, some of the amendments being offered replace all but one word, effectively, entirely new bills. Mark says, only necessary because Obama executive orders, only necessary because Republican majorities for 6 years obstructed any legislative proposal that was part of the administration's program.
Exactly right.
How many hearings were held and amendments considered to the ACA
hundreds.
over the many months it took to get passed? And that's from Mark.
Can we also just, I'm sorry, but can we just get a little bit away from this whole fiction that the hearings are hearings? I mean, the hearings are not hearings. They're basically talkings where senators make speeches and people come up and deliver answers to things.
Rich,
and very rarely, unless it's something like the VA where you have people giving firsthand experiences, very rarely does that go into the legislative process.
That's just not true. I'm sorry.
You know what? You're a smart guy, and I love the fact that you're smart and you're here representing a point of view. But that is inaccurate in that at least when you have a hearing, the Republicans get to talk, the people on the other side get to talk, the experts get to talk on one side or the other, and the American people have some access to different kinds of information. Teresa, you can say.
Yeah, I worked on the House Judiciary Committee in the 80s for several years, and I worked in the Senate Labor and Human Resources Committee in the 90s for several years. The hearing process was essential. Not only did you get to preparing for the hearing, reaching out to people, you got a lot of input to help improve the legislation. You brought in people. Again, it's part of the process of building a national support for an idea or a set of ideas. And even if you think you've got the idea down right, often through the hearing process, you might learn that there are unintended consequences that you can fix in the bill. The hearing process is, you learn a lot. It's not just pro forma. Yes, by the time you get to the day of the hearing, a lot of it is scripted, but it's a very important process in building the other thing it does, and from your own experience, Alan, you can speak to this, that it builds a legislative record that if there's any legal action later on, what the courts do is they go back to the legislative mm-hmm. record that's used in building, you know, the legislation.
Which proves my point. The hearings have become a CYA file. Where
it's not.
And by the way, if you don't believe me, then read the New York Times expose on John Gruber, and on the other fellow Ben Rhodes, where they talk about how they manipulated the hearing and the hearing process, and how they basically crafted their own legislation. Gruber's the one who said, look, we're relying on basically the stupidity of the American people. And sometimes I think that the hearings actually, under the guise of transparency, tend to do exactly that.
Rich, I think that's just doing a disservice to the basic tenets of our democracy. I'm sorry. The hearing process, both for Republicans and Democrats, is a very important part of creating legislative policy changes in our country, I think.
So Brian No, Joe?
Yes. Yeah.
So
yes,
Brian
yes.
writes, insurance companies. If people on Obamacare couldn't keep their doctor or plan, it's always has been the insurance company that made the decision to not include their doctor, or the doctor decided not to be part of that insurance provider. Why does no one challenge Rich Honan on his repeated misinformation?
Because that itself is misinformation. If they change their... Because I remember talking to Joe about this many years ago on this exactly. I was like, Joe, do your people believe that Obama lied about it?
Wait. We're going to get letters. I hate it when we get letters, because then they say, we can't understand you. Each person has to
understand something. We actually, when we're sitting here at the table, we understand each other very well. I mean,
we're
communicating. We're not, I know it comes across like we're interrupting a lot, but we are making eye contact and we are communicating. So it's not as bad as it sounds. This whole idea that, well, it wasn't Obamacare that took away their insurance, it was the insurance companies that took away their insurance. The insurance companies took away their insurance because Obamacare changed the standards upon which the insurance had to be issued. You can't blame that on the insurance companies.
23 million more people have insurance because of that. The rate of increase of costs of health care the tide is turning on the rate of increase in cost of health care. More people are getting preventive care. Hospitals, there's fewer people going through the emergency rooms because now they have a better place to go. All of the data shows that the structure of the Obamacare, the ACA, is doing over time what they said it was going to do. Yes, there are parts of it that aren't working, but a lot of people are better off. And now, as a result of what's happening in the Senate last night and today and what happened in the House a while back, there will be 20 to 30 million people who will no longer be insured. That's going to disrupt their lives, and it's going to disrupt the economy, Rich.
Teresa, you remind me of the old joke and the where the...
Or an you're, old joke? Of,
no,
joke.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean... I did not mean... I apologize.
I'm old, and I'm a joke.
Your argument... I apologize. Your argument reminds me of the old joke, and the punchline is, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes?
I'm going to believe the data.
Yeah, every fact that you gave was incorrect. There's not 23 million people who have insurance now who did not have access to insurance before, and you know that for a fact.
That is true.
If you read the newspapers, particularly out in California and now in other places, you will see that emergency room visits have not dropped. In fact, California Health and other places are having huge problems with people now using those facilities much more than they were.
Now in the last couple of months or now under Obamacare?
Now in the last couple of months, not under
Obamacare. Yes, there are many millions more people insured now than there were when Obamacare passed. There's no doubt about that. The cost curve is turning downward for the first time in a long time.
Wait,
there's
the cost
no
curve, you mean the rate of increase is turning downward?
Which is what they're trying to do.
I'd like to have a letter from everybody who saved the $2,500 that Obama promised they would save on their plan. Let them send their letters in. Because I remember that. Keep your doctor. Keep your plan.
I know that you want to just repeat over and over, less. Keep your doctor, because that's all you got. But, you know.
$2,500 less? I'll look at those letters.
It definitely needs improvement. But it's improved people's lives.
Alan writes, although I do not agree with many of President Obama's liberal policies and changes, he's beginning to seem benevolent compared to President Trump. Weeks and months ago, while I continued to listen to WMC like I have for years, I was getting angry at all the negative reporting on President Trump. While I still do not feel it was very fair reporting for a public radio station, I commend you on opening my eyes to the failure that President Trump is. My listening will continue to be unconditional for this reason. Thank you, WAMC. And that's from Alan, spelled incorrectly. A-L-L-A-N. Okay.
Nice. Well, from one, listen to one, right?
What'd you say?
From an Alan, A-L-L. Yeah. Because often your name is misspelled, and that is.
Oh, yeah. I think
that's a mortal
sin. But
he
spelled his name correctly, presumably.
How about Alan Short Talk? I got that one the other way.
Not nice.
Yeah. There are some people who sit by their radios, and the bile is coming out of their noses and mouths, and it just doesn't change. And Cynthia.
Head spin around.
Yeah. And Cynthia says,
Hi, Cynthia.
Yay, Rich. To the panel. I like the roundtable every day, but I really like it on days Rich joins the panel. His perspective is a welcome addition to the conversation. It's important for me to hear considered commentary from a conservative perspective. Thank you, and that's peace.
I agree, Cynthia, with that. Yeah,
well, and I'll tell you, Cynthia, Rich feels that way too.
He's so happy to be here and hear himself talk.
He is so excited when he comes in.
TJ says, if we were a government of the people, if we were a government of the people, we'd have universal single-payer health care for all, but we aren't, so we don't. And that's from TJ in Kerhonkson. And PJ, PJ.
Kerhonkson.
Yeah.
Where is that? Is that Long Island?
No. More Westchester-ish?
No, I thought it was down. I thought it was Hudson Valley-ish, right?
Yeah.
No,
I think so.
Sorry about that.
PJ says, Robespierre. Panel, Robespierre sought to bully and threaten the convention, and look where that got him. Who shall be our Senate's Italien en Fauche?
Ulster County, near Stone Ridge.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Right. Hello down there.
Very near to the Mohonk Mountain House.
Oh, wow. That's lovely hiking.
Okay. Love it, says Kevin, when Rich is on. I would love to hear a panel of Teresa, Alan, Rich, and Malcolm Nance. Please, Joe, make it happen someday. And that's from Kevin in Tivoli.
That's happened.
Yeah.
Have you
That's
met happened. With Malcolm? No, he hasn't.
Have I met Malcolm? I'm sorry.
You would know.
No, I apologize. No. And
he's the
I'm
national
not...
security expert. You would know if you're on.
You have not been on with Malcolm. We'll change
that.
I've been on with Ira.
Yes. They're different people.
That's very
okay.
Yeah, Malcolm is a spy.
Really? Have you ever seen them both in the same room?
Yes.
And okay. You would know it. Okay, so here we go.
Can't help yourself, can you?
It's a live mic, Alan. It's a live mic.
Yes, what, Senator Rogers.
Did I say something wrong? No.
What was her name?
They just look different, that's all.
Who's the senator who mouthed off yesterday in front of the open mic?
It was Collins.
Collins. That's right. Susan Collins. That's right.
Who, what'd she say? Know, if you care about your health care, write the thank you letter to Senator Collins and Senator
McCarthy. She said that Trump can't govern and
they thought they were off mic.
And then she went after the guy who said that went after the women who were against the health bill and said that his looks were unbearable.
And they also thought, and she also thought, one of them said that Trump was crazy.
I think they all say that.
Yeah.
I don't think they need to not know that they're. I don't think they need to be discreet when they say that.
Just stating the obvious.
Read the New York Times interview or listen to the Boy Scout speech.
And Roger says President Trump's speech to the Boy Scouts was a national embarrassment. While George W. Bush's comments sometimes became a joke on late night TV, Trump's speech reached an all time low of babbling baloney from a president. I cannot imagine any university.
Baloney.
I cannot imagine, it's alliteration if
I
you
like
took
it.
English class. I cannot imagine any university asking Trump to give an inspirational commencement speech with this Boy Scout speech, if graded, received a capital F for incoherent nonsense. And that's from Roger in Utica. And Katie says, hi, panel. Great discussion as always. There was a listener letter about Donnie creating a hostile work environment. And Rich asked what protected class Jeff Sessions is part of as a person over the age of 40.
That's right.
Sessions, me too, could claim bullying due to his age in which the Donald would be in violation of the ADEA, Age Discrimination Employment Act. It surprises me that this issue of workplace harassment and hostile work environment have not been discussed more with respect to this administration. It is rampant, and that's from Katie.
Well, he just bullied again a little while ago on Twitter, so.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's a bully. Behind closed doors, Rich says, I might concede that a small group behind closed doors might be a good place to start if I felt that I, as a woman, was represented in forming the policy. This group's lack of diversity was inexcusable. Excellent commentary today, as usual. That's from Suzanne. And let's see here. Rick in Needham, your panel, single payer. Your more liberal members keep extolling single-payer health care. That's me. As reported on WMC, Vermont recently abandoned going to single-payer because it seemed too expensive for a state, ladies and gentlemen, not for the country. Any comment on that? That was my comment. Okay. Listen, I'm on Medicare. I love Medicare. It's a great program. And when you all get there on the panel, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So all you have to do is take this very well-run, tight program and expand it by a year every year or 2 years every year, and then we'll have single payer in this country, which we ought to have.
You know, there's already 74 million people on Medicare. So, Medicare, Medicaid.
You know, what's your point?
I'm just saying that there's more people on, because of the expansion under the ACA, there's more people on those than most countries have under their entire health plan.
Wait. So what's your point?
My point is that it's I don't know how much more you can actually expand it.
You can expand it so that every American has decent health care.
And pay for it how, Alan?
Pay for it with your tax dollars like every other industrial democracy does.
I like the way you said that, with your tax dollars, meaning my tax dollars.
Yeah, and mine.
Every other industrialized country, first of all, doesn't provide anything close to the level of care that we provide and has way less people that they have to support on those plans.
Yeah, but it's all proportional, don't you see?
They look at the amount of their gross national product that they're spending on their health care.
Well, then you have to be very careful about how you structure these programs and what you do.
So that gets to back to the question of what I consider to be empty rhetoric by the Republicans. Then what would you do? Because they've talked about repeal and replace, and there's going to be something beautiful and wonderful, yet they've never been held accountable to put something on the table that actually does that, and anything on the table they have right now certainly doesn't do that.
The answer is they wouldn't have done it in the first place because it's an undoable thing. Like I said last time, they would not have made these empty promises, excuse me, and these fraudulent representations, because they would have said, we can fix it a little bit, we can work around the edges, but we can't do what it is we are saying we can do.
Final two letters. Here we go.
Good morning, panel. Rich, morning. You are invaluable to the program. Thank you. And that's from Ron. Okay, dear panel, Rich is right. 100 people in a room rarely solved anything. However, this is where he goes off the rail, colon. That small group...
We were wondering where that was, Rich. We're about to find out.
That small group needs, in capital letters, to be a representative group.
Well, that's
having
the point.
Different opinions. By the way, a bunch of conservative and liberal Republicans alone does not constitute representative group. And that's from Bill, and that's what I got.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody who wrote in and for keeping your letters short and to the point for those of you that did. Panel at WAMC.org, Teresa Bourgeois, Rich Owen, and Alan Chartok, thank you all very much. And we will continue the roundtable and we'll commence another panel gathering tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Joe.